Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care Workshop on Update on Lymphoma from the 2014 American Society of Hematology, or ASH, Annual Meeting. And this is an annual program that we do every year, and I know that many of you wait for this program to occur. And this is a collaborative effort between the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care, and there are a number of other collaborating organizations as well. And because of your interest in the program and all of our outreach to all of you, we have on the program today over 1,030 people on the call today. And you come from all over the United States, and we also have international participants from Canada, Croatia, Egypt, Ireland, Israel, Korea, Nigeria, Poland, Sri Lanka, Tunisia, and the United Kingdom. So really from all over the world, and it's really a global effort here to get this information. Now, today's program is supported through unrestricted educational grants to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Celgene Corporation, Genentech, Bio-Oncology, Biogen IDEC, Pharmacyclics, Inc., and Janssen Biotech, Inc., and Seattle Genetics. And I really want to thank them for their support of this program and also for their corporate partnership and collaboration in making today's program possible. Now, I would like to have you for a moment think about the materials you received from Cancer Care, and in those materials is an evaluation form. And I would ask you to take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. We very much rely upon your feedback in our planning all of our programs for the coming year in 2015 and to some extent. So really do tell us the topics you'd like us to offer, what you thought of the program, and we take to heart particularly the topics that you recommend. Indeed, this program really has been going on for a number of years, this collaboration, really based on your feedback that you really want us to do this program each year. So you get right away this information from ASH, as if you were there hearing it from our expert speakers. Now, we have wonderful speakers today on our program, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. John Leonard. Dr. Leonard is the Richard T. Silver Distinguished Professor of Hematology and Medical Oncology. He's Associate Dean for Clinical Research, Weill Cornell Medical College. He's Vice Chairman of Medicine for Clinical Research, Associate Director of the Cancer Center, Chief Lymphoma Service, Attending Physician, New York Presbyterian Hospital. And Dr. Leonard is going to discuss an overview of lymphoma. He's going to discuss disease-specific updates from ASH on indolent and mantle cell lymphoma and the important role of clinical trials. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Leonard.
Well, thank you very much, Carolyn, and I'd like to really thank Cancer Care, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, the other sponsors and participants in this program, as well as Dr. LaCase, my colleague and friend. So it's great to participate in this program. I've had the opportunity to do it several times before, and I think it's something that really is enjoyable for me and hopefully helpful to the patients and family members that are online and listening, et cetera. So the American Society of Hematology is really the largest really meeting or society in the world that's focused on blood, diseases of the blood, and including blood cancers, of which lymphoma is one. And so there's a meeting every year. ASH, or the American Society of Hematology, has been in existence for somewhere over 50 years. I don't know the exact number, but I know it's at least 50. This was a meeting that was held in San Francisco that had, I think, a record number of participants, somewhere around 25,000 participants. And so it's really the meeting where I would say is the premier meeting where those investigators, whether they're laboratory researchers or clinical researchers, present their findings if they're working in lymphoma. So a lot happening, and it's great to discuss this a little bit with you over the next few minutes. It was also a big meeting for me because I got on Twitter for the first time. And so those of you who are on Twitter, I know that Cancer Care is on Twitter, Lymphoma Research Foundation is on Twitter, Dr. LaCase is on Twitter, as am I. And so you can get some updates through Twitter, not only on ASH, but for other things. And I think I've discovered that as a great source of information and interaction. So I'm going to start with just a few words about lymphoma. I know that many of you are familiar with the set of diseases. There are over 70 types of lymphoma, which are diseases of tumors of the immune system. And they are divided very broadly into Hodgkin lymphoma, which Dr. LaCase will discuss in a little bit, and non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which is much more common. There are over really 60 types of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Most of those are called B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. About 10% of those are T-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. Within the B-cell non-Hodgkin lymphomas, there are a number of different subtypes. I'm going to focus primarily on the indolent or slower-growing type, as well as one special type called mantle cell lymphoma, and then Dr. LaCase will talk more about Hodgkin lymphoma and the more aggressive lymphomas. So in indolent lymphomas, just by way of background, there are a number of different treatment options. Indolent lymphomas tend to be slow growing. They tend to be something that is managed over many, many years for most patients. Sometimes they can have a quicker pace of disease, but for many people, this is something that is an on and off problem over many years. Now, that being said, for many people, indolent lymphoma can be something that you die with, not from, meaning that it's something like high blood pressure or diabetes that for many people can be managed over many years, and in some cases can be almost like a hitchhiker where it's along for the ride and not causing any trouble. However, most patients with indolent lymphoma may need treatment either once or many at several times over the course of several decades. And so there's a broad array of ways that we treat patients with indolent lymphoma. Indolent lymphomas can be observed at diagnosis, the so-called watch and wait, and some people call this watch and worry. But the idea being that since this is a chronic long-term process, if it's not bothering the patient, not causing any symptoms, not causing any problems, it may be something that can be observed without any treatment for a period of time. And for some people, that's a few months. For some people, that's several years before they need any treatment if the lymphoma is just found more or less incidentally and not causing any trouble. And so watch and wait is something that is commonly done for patients with indolent lymphoma. And those categories of indolent lymphoma can include follicular lymphoma, can include CLL or chronic lymphocytic leukemia, which is really a type of lymphoma or lymphoid tissue tumor. And then other types called marginal zone lymphoma would be one other more common indolent or slow-growing type of lymphoma. When patients need treatment with indolent lymphoma, they can get treated with a variety of different approaches. Most patients at one point or another, and often at many points or another, get treated with a drug called rituximab. Rituximab is what's called a monoclonal antibody treatment. It's an immune protein that is basically injected into the blood, goes around the blood, binds to the lymphoma cells, activates the immune system to fight the lymphoma, and flicks switches on the lymphoma cells to help control the cells and make them die off or quiet down. And so rituximab, which is, an antibody treatment, is commonly given to patients with really any type of B-cell indolent lymphoma, including follicular lymphoma, including CLL or SLL, small lymphocytic lymphoma, or marginal zone lymphoma. And so the questions that patients have when they need treatment include what treatment to get, and that can be rituximab by itself. It can be rituximab with chemotherapy, and there are a number of different chemotherapy regimens. One of those is a drug called bendamustine, which is an intravenous chemotherapy medication that does not generally have hair loss, can have low blood count, can have some nausea as its principal side effects. There's a regimen called CHOP, which is a combination of drugs, which is more typically used for the more aggressive lymphomas, but can also be used for the indolent lymphomas that has a little more in the way of side effects, particularly hair loss. And so For patients with indolent lymphomas, there are a number of different options, including rituximab or one of several types of chemotherapy plus rituximab, or there are clinical trials where new drugs are being added to rituximab as part of the initial treatment. When the disease comes back at some point in time, patients may get retreated with the same form of therapy. They may get rituximab again. They may get chemotherapy of one sort or another with rituximab. Or there are other drugs that are either approved or used in this sort of situation. One of those, which is a new drug that had some updated information at the ASH meeting, a drug called idelalisib. And idelalisib is a pill. It's in the category of drugs called a PI3 kinase inhibitor. And this is a drug that's approved for patients with recurrent follicular lymphoma, so follicular lymphoma that's come back several times after previous treatment, or CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And again, idelalisib is a pill. It essentially flicks some switches in the lymphoma cells that helps them to die off. And this is a drug that is a very effective treatment for patients with disease that's come back after chemotherapy, that's come back after rituximab. And so we have a number of different clinical trials. One of the studies that was presented at the ASH meeting looked at this drug in combination with other treatments, with rituximab or with chemotherapy plus rituximab, and suggested that this drug can be given in combination with chemotherapy. But again, that's not the standard way to give the drug, and there are a number of clinical trials that are going on right now to try to explore that even further. Now, another aspect of follicular lymphoma that was presented at the ASH meeting, which I think was quite interesting, were some data from the Mayo Clinic that gave us some information about patients who had an indolent lymphoma and that had been watched or had done well for a period of time. And the suggestion was that there is a group or a population of patients with indolent lymphoma that when they are diagnosed and when they go a significant period of time, at least in the range of a year or so, and if their disease has been quiet and kind of behaved itself during that time, it turns out that that group of patients actually has a lifespan, how long they live, that's comparable to people that didn't have lymphoma to begin with. And so we have data now that suggests that for some patients with indolent lymphoma, the disease is more or less a hitchhiker, and if it behaves itself, that the lifespan may be normal. And while we don't like to get into too much around this issue in these calls, I think for patients, looking at this can be quite reassuring, and that's why I want to make the point that groups of patients with indolent lymphoma can actually have a very normal lifespan. And I think that's something that I tell my patients in practice and something that I think patients out there dealing with follicular lymphoma in some cases can be reassured by. And so I think that's important information. We have a number of new drugs that are being studied in follicular lymphoma and other lymphomas. The last comment that I'm going to make about indolent lymphoma is the drug called ibrutinib. And ibrutinib is another tyrosine kinase inhibitor, basically a switch inhibitor. It's also called a BTK inhibitor. Bruton's tyrosine kinase is the name. It's not that important. But ibrutinib is a drug. It's a pill that flicks switches on the lymphoma cells. And it is a drug that is very useful for certain patients with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, or CLL, and with mantle cell lymphoma, which is a different lymphoma subtype. Mantle cell lymphoma is a subtype that tends to be chronic. It is treated in a variety of different ways, ranging from gentler chemotherapy to more intensive chemotherapy and stem cell transplants. There's a lot of variation, I would say, across the country based on physician preferences, patient preferences, and the age of patients. Older patients tend to be treated a little more gently than younger patients with mantle cell lymphoma. But ibrutinib is a drug that is an active treatment, meaning it can be useful and put the disease in remission for patients with mantle cell lymphoma and with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and it's FDA approved in this setting. Now, one piece of information that came out of the ASH or the hematology meetings is that ibrutinib may not be quite such a good drug for patients with the follicular type of lymphoma. So I think the point of this is that while that it can be useful in follicular lymphoma, ibrutinib seems to be better, in my view at least, in mantle cell lymphoma and in chronic lymphocytic leukemia based on the data. And so it is very important for patients and physicians to know exactly what lymphoma subtype 1 is dealing with in order to try to pick the right therapy that fits the individual clinical situation. Finally, I just want to make one more comment about mantle cell lymphoma. And that is that there is a lot of discussion about in mantle cell lymphoma, which again accounts for about 10% of lymphomas. It tends to be a chronic lymphoma that historically has been treated very aggressively in younger patients with more intensive chemotherapy with stem cell transplants, and in older patients tends to be treated with chemotherapy, commonly the drug bendamustine plus rituximab. And so the point I want to make about mantle cell lymphoma reflects some data that our group presented, and it is that we may be developing and using new drugs earlier in the course of the disease for mantle cell lymphoma. And we presented a small study using a drug called lenalidomide, which is a pill. It's an immunomodulatory drug plus rituximab without chemotherapy as initial treatment for mantle cell lymphoma. And we saw in a small study some very good results suggesting that perhaps in this type of lymphoma, mantle cell lymphoma, one might have additional options to keep in mind. And it sets the stage for clinical trials that are going to evaluate new therapies as part of the initial treatment for mantle cell lymphoma and other types of lymphoma. This combination of lenalidomide plus rituximab is also in an ongoing clinical trial in follicular lymphoma. And so in the last minute or so, I just want to make a point about clinical trials, and I'm sure we'll come back to this in the discussion. Clinical trials, everything that Dr. LaCase and I are discussing with you, and frankly, everything that was presented at the ASH meeting that is moving the field forward, developing new treatments, giving us new knowledge as to what to expect out of these diseases, and coming out and developing new treatments, is from clinical trials. And so all of the progress we're made anytime a doctor goes into a room with a patient and talks about what to expect out of the disease comes out of clinical trials. And so I would encourage patients to talk to their healthcare team, talk to their health advisors, talk to their physicians, their nurses, whoever's influencing their care and giving them guidance, and look into the possibility of clinical trials, because as this meeting has shown us, and I think Dr. LaCase will reinforce, clinical trials offer patients a number of new options that they wouldn't already have, and in some cases, for some patients, this may make a very big difference in how they do, in addition to moving the field forward. So with that, I'll stop and turn things over to Dr. LaCase.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Dr. Leonard, for just a very informative and really an exceptional presentation. And our next speaker is Dr. Ann LaCase, and Dr. LaCase is Senior Physician, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Assistant Professor, Harvard Medical School, Director, Hematology Oncology Fellowship, Dana-Farber Partners Cancer Care. And Dr. LaCase is going to discuss disease-specific updates from ASH on aggressive and Hodgkin's lymphoma, talking with the healthcare team about your treatment options and quality of life concerns. It's now my pleasure to turn this program over to Dr. LaCase.
Thank you very much, Carolyn, for the introduction, and I really appreciate being invited to participate in this call with all of you and with Dr. Leonard. I have to say I enjoyed very much seeing him at ASH, and he is a Twitter expert, and I think I learned a lot on our institution recently. Encouraged us to start on Twitter, and I was very surprised at the utility of learning about what was going on, but he really helped me figure out how to do decent tweets. So I am going to spend some time talking about updates first in Hodgkin lymphoma, and I think the ASH meeting was particularly exciting for those of us who treat Hodgkin's. Hodgkin's, as Dr. Leonard mentioned, is a less common disease with about 10,000 new cases a year in the U.S., and it's a disease we do very well with the vast majority of patients being cured of their disease, but we're always looking to improve those numbers and to develop treatments that are less toxic and more effective for patients. So I'm going to go through and talk about a number of different studies in Hodgkin's, the first being a study in patients who were never treated previously. There was a drug approved by the FDA just a couple of years ago called brentuximab vedotin. This is an interesting drug. It's a protein antibody similar to Rituxan in that it binds to a protein that sits on the surface of the cell of the called the Reed-Sternberg cell, which is the cancer cell in Hodgkin lymphoma. And this drug is attached to a chemotherapy drug. So it's the idea of a smart bomb where the drug binds to the surface of the cancer cell and delivers the chemotherapy drug directly into the tumor cell. And this particular drug was shown to be very effective in people who had had many prior treatments, and based on that was approved by the FDA. Given our excitement on how active this drug was, there was a clinical trial initiated in patients who had never been treated before, who had what we call advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma, meaning they had stage 3 or 4 disease, so sort of disease in multiple different places. And this drug was combined with standard chemotherapy. At the ASH meeting, Dr. Connors from Vancouver presented the longer-term follow-up on this study, and it was really quite remarkable. The vast majority of patients who had advanced stage Hodgkin lymphoma remained in remission at 3 years after completing treatment, suggesting that those patients were very likely to be cured of their disease. And the number of patients who went into remission was really in excess of any prior treatment we've ever seen in Hodgkin lymphoma. So based on this, there is a large randomized study ongoing internationally comparing standard chemotherapy for Hodgkin with ABVD chemotherapy versus this combination including brentuximab vedotin plus AVD, which is the three-drug combination included in ABVD minus one of the drugs, which has been shown to cause some lung toxicity. So that study is ongoing, and anyone who has newly diagnosed Hodgkin lymphoma stage 3 or 4, I would really encourage to think about participating in this study, because I think it's really going to change our standard of care in treating patients with Hodgkin's in the future. Brentuximab was also examined in patients who had been previously treated and unfortunately had their Hodgkin lymphoma return. In one study presented by a physician from the City of Hope, brentuximab was given as a single agent to patients who had relapsed Hodgkin lymphoma and were preparing to go to a stem cell transplant, autologous stem cell transplant, meaning using your own stem cells. And with this drug alone, a good proportion of patients had improvement in their disease, with a percentage of patients having their disease disappear completely. And many patients did not actually require chemotherapy and went on to autologous stem cell transplant. That was very encouraging. And then we presented from multiple centers around the U.S. Worked together to combine brentuximab vedotin with a chemotherapy drug that Dr. Leonard already mentioned called bendamustine, which is a very active sort of standard chemotherapy drug. And when these two drugs were given together in patients who had been previously treated for Hodgkin lymphoma and their disease either didn't go away completely or came back, almost all of them responded, and a very high percentage of patients had their disease go away completely and then successfully went on to stem cell transplant. Overall, this was an outpatient regimen that was quite well tolerated. There were some rashes and some other allergic type reactions that we managed by adding additional pre-medications. But overall, I think it was a very encouraging combination for patients. Lastly, with regard to brentuximab, there was also a large study that was presented by Dr. Moskowitz from Memorial Sloan Kettering looking at giving brentuximab to patients after autologous transplant. So these were patients whose disease had come back, they had undergone a transplant, and then they were randomly assigned to get brentuximab or to be followed as we standardly would for any patient after transplant. And this was a positive study showing that if you gave up to a year of brentuximab following a stem cell transplant, that even more patients would stay in remission. So I suspect that is going to impact how we care for patients moving forward. Then there were a number of studies presented using a very exciting new class of drugs which affect the immune system. They're called immune checkpoint inhibitors. And two of these drugs called PD-1 inhibitors were studied in patients with relapsed Hodgkin lymphoma. These are drugs, Hodgkin lymphoma and many tumor cells put proteins on the surface of their cells to escape the immune system. So basically they turn off a patient's own T cells, which could have an effect of attacking the lymphoma or other tumor cells, whatever it may be. These drugs actually interfere with those signals between the tumor cells and the immune system and essentially reinvigorate the patient's own T cells to attack the lymphoma. So it's a very attractive kind of immunotherapy option. These drugs have been studied in melanoma and other solid tumors with very encouraging results, and this was really the first studies looking at using these drugs in lymphoma. So there's a drug called nivolumab, which was presented by one of my colleagues here, Philippe Armand, looking at that in patients whose Hodgkin had lymphoma had returned after, in many cases, multiple prior treatments. And again, nearly all the patients had some shrinkage of their disease. Some of the patients had complete disappearance, and the disease seemed to stay away for a sizable period of time. And this was really a preliminary study, what we call a phase 1B study, just sort of getting more information about do we have the right dose, is the dose safe, and it really showed some really remarkable responses. Another drug that is related to a nivolumab called pembrolizumab. These drugs have very difficult to pronounce names, but this was another PD-1 antibody, and it was used again in patients whose Hodgkin lymphoma had returned. And again, this drug, though not quite as active as the nivolumab in this one particular study, still looked extremely promising in terms of a good option for treating patients with relapsed Hodgkin lymphoma. So I'm sure that these studies will be expanded. We'll have new studies and combinations with these drugs, with chemotherapy or other approaches. And I think this is very likely to have a major impact on how we treat Hodgkin lymphoma in the future. So switching gear to talk for a few minutes about non-Hodgkin lymphoma, the aggressive subtypes, there were a number of interesting studies presented, one of which was a study from France looking at patients who have early stage 1 or 2 diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, which is the most common lymphoma that we see in adults in the U.S. And this study looked at, for patients who had a good response to initial standard R-CHOP chemotherapy and had a negative PET scan, was there any benefit to then administering radiotherapy to the initial sites of disease? And these were this was a very well done study, and they randomized patients to either getting radiotherapy or no further treatment. And interestingly, there was no difference in the outcome for patients who were in remission after R-CHOP by PET scan. There was no difference in outcome as to whether they got radiation or not. So I think this is an exciting, potentially practice-changing result, telling us that we can avoid radiation in a significant proportion of patients, and often these lymph nodes present in the head and neck or areas where patients can have long-term side effects from the radiation, including dry mouth or other side effects. The next study I wanted to discuss briefly was a study originated at the National Cancer Institute, but many different sites around the country participated. And this was a study in what we call MYC-rearranged diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So these were, or other aggressive lymphomas. We know that MYC is a protein that causes cells to divide rapidly, and there have been a number of studies recently that have suggested patients whose lymphoma have this MYC protein may have more aggressive disease. There's been a lot of debate about how best to manage patients with these types of lymphomas, which even include a subset which we call double hit lymphomas, meaning that they have two different proteins, MYC and another protein called BCL2, typically, that have been rearranged in the tumor cells. And in this study, a regimen called dose-adjusted Rituxan plus Epoch, so it's a standard chemotherapy regimen like CHOP, but adds another drug called etoposide, and then adjusts the doses according to the individual patient's blood counts. And the results of this study were very, very encouraging in a disease where we know with R-CHOP chemotherapy that a number of patients will be likely to relapse. And in this study, it really looked much better than we would have anticipated with R-CHOP. So that study will continue to have follow-up, and hopefully this will represent a new and improved way to treat patients with MYC rearranged lymphomas. A couple of words about T-cell lymphomas. T-cell lymphomas are rare, much more uncommon than B-cell lymphomas, and there were a couple of new drugs that looked interesting. There was a drug called IPI-145, or duvelisib. This is a PI3 kinase inhibitor, one of the types of drugs that Dr. Leonard mentioned that turns switches off in tumor cells. And there were some very interesting preliminary results looking at this drug in patients with T-cell lymphomas that had come back after prior treatments. And we hope that this will lead to new combinations and better treatment options for those patients. So with that, I'll go on to the next topic I was asked to address, which is talking with your healthcare team about treatment options. And I think, as Dr. Leonard mentioned, we certainly encourage patients to talk to their physicians and their treating team, as well as their friends and family, about not only standard treatments for lymphomas, but also what clinical trials might be available and might offer a new and exciting treatment that might be of benefit for a particular patient. The Lymphoma Research Foundation has lots of patient resources in order to help patients find information about what trials out there exist and can guide them. They have their helpline and multiple. They have an app that also for your smartphone that can help guide you in terms of where to get information about the diseases and potential treatment options. Quality of life concerns are really a major topic for our patients, and we know that many patients are nervous or reticent about taking chemotherapy, and I think are worried that these treatments, as well as some of our new treatments, may have significant impacts on quality of life. And I think the major key here is for patients to ask questions, to write down. It's often very nerve-wracking to go into a first patient visit with your with a new oncologist and try to think about all the different quality of life concerns and other questions that you or your family may have, and writing them down or keeping a log of those is really helpful, I think, in reminding patients of questions they want to ask. I think we are very mindful about quality of life issues and try our best to really talk about those openly and talk about different treatment options or other supportive care ways, including support groups or multiple different ranges of options to help support patients through the process of being treated with lymphoma. And I think the Lymphoma Research Foundation also does a wonderful job at giving patients resources in order to find help and support through the process. So with that, I think I'll stop, and I think we'll be going on to questions soon.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lacasse. That was really wonderful and very informative, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next presenter is Anita Welburn. Ms. Welburn is Senior Director, Patient Education and Services, Lymphoma Research Foundation. Ms. Welburn has been really an architect in making this program possible, both in terms of helping us to carve out the topics we would be addressing, as well as the speakers, and in terms of also helping to get support for this program as well. So I really cannot thank her enough, and it's my pleasure to introduce Ms. Welburn, who will be describing to you the services of the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Ms. Welburn?
Thank you, Carolyn. It's been a pleasure working with you as well, and we thank Cancer Care for our continued partnership. I also want to take a moment and thank our esteemed faculty, Dr. Leonard and Dr. Lacasse, for their time and expertise, and just absolutely everything that they do for the Lymphoma Research Foundation and those impacted by a lymphoma diagnosis. I also want to acknowledge our sponsors, Celgene Corporation, Genentech Biooncology, Biogenetic, Pharmacyclics, Inc., Janssen Biotech, Inc., and Seattle Genetics for supporting today's call. And then I'd like to share a little bit with you about the Lymphoma Research Foundation. LRF is the nation's largest nonprofit organization devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing people with lymphoma and healthcare professionals with up-to-date information about this type of cancer. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. We invest millions of dollars each year to combat lymphoma and assist those whose lives have been affected by a lymphoma diagnosis. The foundation remains dedicated to identifying a cure through an aggressively funded research program and to helping members of the lymphoma community by providing comprehensive disease-specific programs and services. We provide programming for people dealing with a lymphoma diagnosis as well as their caregivers, and these include our lymphoma helpline, where our professional, specially trained staff can assist you with information, resources, and other support. And you also heard from Dr. LaCase and Dr. Leonard about the importance of clinical trials. During our call today, we also offer an information service to assist you in your search for clinical trials as a part of your treatment options in your planning. We want to educate you about this process and really make sure that you understand that this is part of treatment and not as some think an end-of-life resort or last resort of treatment. Our Lymphoma Support Network is a national one-to-one peer support program that matches lymphoma patients and caregivers with volunteers who have had similar lymphoma-related experiences. And we have print and web-based publications, including newsletters and comprehensive disease booklets, our fact sheets, our e-newsletters, including our new survivorship e-series. And this series is designed to discuss the challenges of living with a lymphoma diagnosis and, of course, the quality of life issues that you heard Dr. LaCase talk about today. At our website, you're going to find information on a wide variety of education and support topics, and you can also download our podcast and webcast, and also visit our YouTube channel where we have a number of video interviews with lymphoma experts. We also encourage you to download our award-winning mobile app, Focus on Lymphoma. You heard Dr. LaCase mention it earlier, and it's the first mobile application for smartphones and tablets that provide patients and caregivers with comprehensive content based on the lymphoma diagnosis. And we also have a feature to help you manage your doctor sessions and your medications and keep track of your blood work results and your treatment side effects. We hope to see you at an upcoming LRF in-person patient education conference where we encourage you to stay educated by attending an informative Ask the Doctor program or lymphoma workshop in the coming months. And you can also support lymphoma patients and charge to eradicate lymphoma by becoming a Lymphoma Research Foundation advocate to make sure that our lawmakers are aware of and respond to the challenges of living with a lymphoma diagnosis. For information on LRF programs and services and to register for an upcoming event, call the LRF helpline toll-free at 800-500-9976 or visit us on the website at lymphoma.org. And if you don't get an opportunity to get your question answered today, please contact the helpline for more assistance with any of the information that you hear regarding your questions about clinical trials and all the great information that came out from ASH. And on behalf of the Lymphoma Research Foundation, I thank you for spending this time with us, and we wish you all the best in the new year. And Carolyn, I'll turn the program back over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Anita. That was wonderful and really very informative, and everyone now has all the information. Many of you already are taking advantage of the wonderful services of the Lymphoma Research Foundation, but if you have not, definitely put them on your list to call, absolutely. And I just want to say a few words about Cancer Care. We're a collaborating organization with Lymphoma Research Foundation, and Cancer Care offers free psychosocial services to people living with lymphoma, with cancers, and we provide those services on our helpline, and our staff is oncology social workers. We have a number of oncology social workers who are here to address your concerns and questions. We offer practical and financial assistance. We offer a lot of counseling services to people, a chance to talk with someone about some of your concerns, about your quality of life, about the things that you might be worried about, perhaps about how to talk with your children or your employer about your cancer. We also have support groups, and we offer them on the telephone and online, so whatever is most convenient for you, so you don't have to travel to get to a group. It really is on the telephone or online. And we have these type of workshops and various publications and, of course, our website. And our helpline is 1-800-813-HOPE or 1-800-813-4673. And you can also visit our website at www.cancercare.org. And you have all this information, of course, in your materials. And now we want to take as many of your questions as possible. And I think, as Anita had just said, if we don't get to your questions, if it's you have a medically focused question, you definitely want to contact the Lymphoma Research Foundation at 1-800-500-9976. And if you have a question about your psychosocial concerns, you can call Cancer Care at 1-800-813-4673. With that, without further ado, now I'm going to ask Stephanie to bring all of our speakers on board, and if you could explain to everybody how to queue up for questions, we're going to take as many of your questions as possible.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question comes from Carol M. Your line is open. Carol, your line is open.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Carol. Did you have a question?
Yes,
right
I
now?
Did. I went into anaphylactic shock with, basically respiratory arrest with Rituxan. Is there a humanized form of Rituxan that somebody could take in addition to chemotherapy?
Okay. Thank you for your question. Dr. Linden, can you address that question in a general way?
Sure. So I think I heard the caller ask about a side effect of rituximab. So rituximab is a monoclonal antibody. The main side effect or the most common side effect that patients can have relates to fever, chills, shakes, kind of a reaction, an immune reaction while the drug is being dripped in. That usually happens the first time and is less common there afterwards. There are medications that are given to help prevent that, usually Tylenol or acetaminophen, and Benadryl or diphenhydramine are given to prevent that. And there are some tricks and other things that are occasionally done. More serious reactions to rituximab as far as the infusion reaction or the side effects when the medicine drips in are less common, but occasionally happen for some patients. And there are occasional patients, although it's not very common, that can have these reactions so severely that they can't get the drug. I would say that the vast majority of patients, one way or another, we can get the drug in, and it is a very important drug for many patients with lymphoma. So I think the caller was asking about newer forms of rituximab. There are several other forms of rituximab, newer versions of rituximab, that are either being studied in clinical trials, or two of them are FDA approved for chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And so these are new constructs or new different sorts of structure of the antibody, the immune protein, that has a more human form. Now, whether or not that reduces the side effects of the infusion reaction of the drug going in, I think it's hard to answer definitively, but in reality, these drugs also have similar side effects. And so I think if one is having trouble getting the drug administered, meaning they're having reactions to it, it may be something that it can be dealt with most of the time by the doctor, by the nurse, by the treatment team, and the patient can manage, although this can arise. Most patients eventually get it, and it's not clear that the other drugs are any different or better in this regard.
So thank you very much. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Jill T. Your line is open. She may have pressed the star one key in error. Our next question comes from Denise M. Your line is open.
I have a question for Dr. Leonard. Why is it that patients with the same diagnosis, for example, stage 3 follicular lymphoma, have such a variable clinical course? Some may remain in watchful waiting for a while. Some are treated and then relapse over and over again. What is the current thinking about that?
Wonderful. Dr. Leonard, that's a great question.
So that's a great question. Why do patients with the same diagnosis have different outcomes? And that is, if you think about it, that's something that happens with just about every disease. There are people with diabetes who differ in their outcome. There are people with hypertension or high cholesterol that differ in their outcome. And there are a number of different reasons behind that, one of which is that the host or the person where the lymphoma is occurring is different. And so the immune systems of the person, the what we call the environment or the microenvironment where the tumor cells live, those may influence how the patient does and what the course of the disease is. The other part of this is that really people that have the diagnosis of, say, follicular lymphoma aren't all the same. While we label two people with having follicular lymphoma, at the molecular level, at the genes and the proteins that are expressed in the tumor cells that are present there that are driving how that tumor is behaving, they may be very different even though they look the same under the microscope and are therefore labeled the same thing by the pathologist. So there's a lot more, there are a lot more differences between individuals with the same diagnosis that the name doesn't encompass, doesn't describe. And that's really what we're getting at. And I know Dr. LaCase's group, as well as ours, as well as others across the country, are really focusing on what's termed precision medicine or precision cancer therapy, the idea of figuring out these differences between individuals, even if they have the same diagnosis, identifying what the molecular problems are within those groups, and then applying different drugs for those specific subtypes so that a drug works 100% of the time in a small group of patients as opposed to a fraction of the time in the larger group of patients due to those differences.
Excellent. And our next question?
Our next question comes from Patty D. Your line is open.
I guess that's me.
yes, that is.
Tis I. Okay. I want to know if there has been any progress in arresting or treating, predicting, and better treatments for transformed follicular lymphoma.
Thank you for that excellent question. Dr. LaCase, can you address that question?
So that's another great question. I think along with the question raised by the previous caller, I don't think we have a great understanding as to why some patients with follicular lymphoma never transform and others transform early or at various points along the course of their disease. And I think that treatment options for transformed follicular lymphoma often are dependent upon what the patient has been treated with previously with follicular lymphoma. So we know that patients who have never had any prior therapy or in the era of Rituxan with standard chemotherapy that we use for aggressive lymphomas, such as R-CHOP, that many of those patients will do well with R-CHOP alone. For patients who have been previously treated or who have more volume of disease or more burden of disease, we often think about following up standard chemotherapy with an autologous stem cell transplant. I think some of these new drugs, some of the drugs targeting BCL2, like a drug called ABT-199, and some of our newer drugs that affect signaling pathways and in the tumor cells will hopefully show some good effects in transformed follicular lymphoma. But I think for now, getting into a clinical trial really is a key way to think about managing this disease, particularly for people who have had prior chemotherapy.
Thank you. I have a question from one of our online participants, from Jennifer. Can you discuss how a patient that has had mantle cell lymphoma for 13 years and now has a pleural effusion may be treated? Dr. Leonard, can you address this in a general way?
Well, so a pleural effusion relates to a collection of fluid that occurs between the lining of the lung and the chest wall. So it's basically fluid that accumulates in that space. That is an uncommon thing in patients with lymphoma, but it occasionally happens. It can happen in any type of lymphoma, including mantle cell that was mentioned. That can occur because of the lymph nodes in the chest being enlarged and swollen, and so fluid can back up into that space between the lungs and the wall of the chest, or it can be because there are lymphoma cells that have settled there and are creating some fluid there, and that what typically that can affect the breathing of the individual where this is going on. So the typical way of dealing with this is to treat the lymphoma, to give chemotherapy or whatever treatment is appropriate to manage the lymphoma at that time. Sometimes draining that fluid out with a needle or a tube can help to relieve the symptoms until the lymphoma can get under better control and the symptoms can improve.
Thank you. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Vicki G. Your line is open.
Yes. Could you please spell the name of the medication for recurrent CLL patients?
Thank you.
I think I mentioned two drugs. One of those is ibrutinib, I-B-R-U-T-I-N-I-B. And the other one is idelalisib, I-D-E-L-A-L-I-S-I-B. So ibrutinib and idelalisib, both of those are approved for patients with recurrent CLL, and they're also useful in other types of lymphoma.
Excellent. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from James J. Your line is open.
Can you hear me?
Yes, James. Yes, your question.
Okay. I had mantle cell lymphoma. Induction treatment was bendamustine and Rituxan. Very good results. CT scan, PET scans completely clean after six cycles, and bone marrow less than 1% consistent with residual mantle cell lymphoma. 6 months later, a PET scan lit up a few nodes, but there was no lymphadenopathy, CT scans clean, and bone marrow the same, less than 1%. So
and
we're
James,
hitting
your
it.
Question? Up your question. Yeah. I guess you're coming to it, yes.
Yeah. We're hitting it again with bendamustine and Rituxan. What I'm wondering in terms of another potential relapse, it was Dr. Lachaise who talked about the NCI study. How do you – is understanding the whether or not I have mixed proteins with my MCL relevant to the decision if I relapse, what then next to do, and how do you get tested for mixed proteins?
Okay, these are excellent questions. I have to say this is an extraordinary audience today, James. Thank you for your question. Dr. Lachaise, can you address it in a general way? And then we would encourage James, of course, to take this information back to his treating healthcare team.
I have to say I'm not quite sure what you mean by mixed protein. John, do you know, Dr. Leonard, do you know what he might be referring to?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, maybe what you could do is just address recurrent mantle cell lymphoma in this situation and how you approach it. That may be useful.
Right. So the drug that Dr. Leonard mentioned earlier, ibrutinib, is a very active drug in relapsed mantle cell lymphoma, and there was some data presented at the ASH meeting this year combining ibrutinib with Rituxan and showing very nice responses. I think given that your disease may have, it sounds like it's not 100% certain that it's back and on the move, but if it is, and it's been a short interval since you were just treated, I would probably be thinking about alternative treatments to what you received initially, meaning the bendamustine and Rituxan, and you might even think about, clinical trials or thinking about ultimately trying to get to some type of stem cell transplant, maybe. So I would suggest maybe speaking to your physician about investigating what clinical trials you might be eligible for rather than going back to the treatment that you've already had. If that were not of interest to you, there are a number of other chemotherapy regimens that are active, including drugs like CHOP or a drug called cytarabine. There really are a number of good options in this setting, but I would think about investigating the whole range of possibilities before deciding on one treatment.
And we have another question from one of our online participants, from Joan. Is it a concern if feel burning when bendamustine is infused? What can be done about it? Dr. Leonard, could you address that?
So bendamustine is a chemotherapy drug. Various chemotherapy drugs have different effects on the veins. Some of them really don't bother the veins at all when they go in. Others irritate the veins. In some cases, the nurses are very careful when they infuse the drug, and rarely there can be more damage or an injury to the vein. So it really depends on the drug that one is dealing with. There are a variety of different things one can do. Certain chemotherapy drugs can be given through regular IVs in the arm. Sometimes patients need something called a port or a PICC line, a special IV up in the chest or higher up in the arm to prevent this. So it really depends on the situation and the drug that one is given, what complications are seen. Bendamustine is pretty well known to, in a percentage of patients, cause some inflammation of the veins, some irritation of the veins. And that is not really like a burn or a strict damage or what we call extravasation out of the vein. It's kind of an inflammation of the vein. So that often can be managed with things like ibuprofen, warm compresses, elevation, sometimes diluting the drug a little bit more than the nurse and pharmacist can do. It's usually a manageable thing, and by moving around from one treatment to the next, what vein is used, that can sometimes get around this. Occasionally, it's enough of an issue for patients that they do need to get the drug through a port or a special IV because this is just such an uncomfortable thing. That is not normal, but it occasionally can happen. So I would talk to your treatment team about some of these tricks, and they can review what option is best for your situation.
Excellent. And we have another question. This is really quite a tour de force of questions here from Deborah. Are there any disadvantages of maintenance Rituxan after initial treatment for follicular lymphoma? Dr. Lacoste, can you address that?
So this is an area of big controversy. There have been some studies in follicular lymphoma in patients who have been initially treated both with chemotherapy plus Rituxan or Rituxan alone as to whether there's a benefit in keeping patients in remission longer. We know from a study from France that patients who got initial chemotherapy and then were randomly assigned to get maintenance Rituxan or observation that the patients who got maintenance Rituxan stayed in remission longer, which I think makes a lot of intuitive sense. I think the bigger question is, does that translate into people living longer, or is there any disadvantage to stopping the Rituxan after the initial chemo, not giving maintenance, but then using it again at the time a patient's disease comes back? And I don't think we have a lot of good answers to that question, and I think different oncologists sort of see this a little bit differently. Typically, we discuss in detail with patients the risks and benefits of giving maintenance, but I think that there's been a bit of a move away from maintenance Rituxan of late, but I think it still is a consideration and something that needs to be personalized for each given patient.
And there's a last question from one of our online participants. What was the most important discussion or outcome from the ASH annual meeting? This one is regarding the treatment of mantle cell lymphoma, but I'm just wondering also if we just want to generalize that. So I'm going to ask Dr. Leonard to start and then Dr. Lacoste if you just want to comment on that. And
Sure, I may steal Dr. Lacase's thunder a little bit. She alluded to the immune therapies. I think if you read the New York Times and many of the other national papers, you'll have seen articles about this and the concept that the importance of the immune system and the host in fighting cancers, including lymphomas. And so the drug that she so nicely described to you is really an example of how, while we target the tumor cells, the ability of the immune system to manage or control or hopefully get rid of the tumor cells is essential. And I think the data that we saw with nivolumab in Hodgkin lymphoma is really quite striking. It may be a quite important phenomenon in Hodgkin lymphoma because of the nature of how the immune system reacts to Hodgkin lymphoma, but I will tell you that there are a whole family of these proteins and drugs that target these proteins involved with the immune system being able to be blocked by the tumor cells. And I think we're going to see a lot more of them. I know Dana-Farber and Weill Cornell, where I am, as well as other centers across the country, have a number of exciting clinical trials. And companies have various drugs that target these pathways, and I think this is going to be an important new frontier in treating blood cancers, including lymphomas and other tumors.
Dr. LaCase, did you want to add anything?
No, I just would say that I agree completely. I think there are lots of new drugs in clinical trials looking at these pathways, and we're very excited about this new avenue of research.
Well, thank you. I want to thank you all as speakers. You've just been extraordinary. And all of you who've participated today are extraordinary. You've asked really extraordinary questions, wonderfully thought-out questions, and all of you who've been listening as well. I do want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour workshop and that in planning a program like this, the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care recognize that you have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour and that you probably have other questions you want to ask and other concerns you may have. So we don't want anyone to leave this call feeling like you are alone. We want you to know that you're now part of this broader community of the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care. And that means that you have two numbers that you can call, at any time. You can call the Lymphoma Research Foundation at 1-800-500-9976, and that information is on all of your materials, of course, that you've received. You can call their helpline, and you also can call Cancer Care's Hopeline to talk with one of our oncology social workers at 1-800-813-4673. Including today, we also want to acknowledge to all of you that this is a complicated time of year. It is a holiday time of year, and it is a time of year when there is sometimes people experience a bit more stress and concerns, and we do want to wish you all a very fine time of year, recognizing that, indeed, this is a time of year that does come with a little extra stress in addition to all the other things that happen in your life. We want you to take advantage of your healthcare team and also to be most kind to yourselves and to those you love. I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.